How it is in the other frontier houses, I cannot say for certain, but I gather that some are in the hands of men who, on earth, held other religious views, and in these service of intercession takes other forms than that I witnessed. Like attracts like, you see, and my guide naturally took me to the house in which I should find the system most in consonance with that to which I more or less belonged on earth. Similarly, some souls in hell are drawn towards salvation by the men who belong to this house, while others go to those in which Mohammedanism or non-conformity is dominant. But there is no bitterness here. Each house does its work, and helps other houses when it can. Thus, if a Mohammedan or non-conformist missionary were to find a man and help him, if he saw that that man's spiritual development would be quicker if he went to the house belonging to the church people, he would take him there. So, too, with the church missionaries. Moreover, this transference of rescued is constantly taking place. We do not worry about our religious, save the word, differences here. They still exist to a limited degree, but we know that as we mount higher all that is false will fade, while only the truth will remain. So we go quietly on our way. This light shining from this solitary window at the top of the building is a beacon of hope far down into hell. All the houses of rest, even the little ones scattered lower down in hell, each has its beacon thus kept ever burning. Having entered the building, we passed down a passage and through a door into a classroom. This was filled with light from the teacher, but what shall I say of the pupils? Pictured the lowest and most degraded men reduced to the size of tiny children. Imagine them misshapen and idiots for the most part, with a low, cunning expression on their wizened faces. This will give you but a faint idea of what I saw. They were ever trying to play some stupid trick or other either on their neighbors or on the master. In addition to him, there were two other spirits who stood behind the form while he taught from the front. These three were needed, firstly, to keep the room sufficiently light, for from each of the children there seemed to exude a kind of darkness which appeared to be burnt up by the light. Further, they were needed to keep the pupils under control. They did this solely by a kind of hypnotic power, by the exercise of their will and of their mentality. If for a moment they relaxed their concentration, at once several of the boys broke out into disorder. This work must be very wearying, I said to my guide. It is, he replied. The teachers have to be relieved after a very short spell. That is why so large a number of spirits are needed even in this single institution. Are the girls taught separately? I inquired. Yes, nearly always. They need women, and these need men. Further, we do not find it wise to let the sexes mix much here. These are not innocent babes, you must remember. Though they have the spiritual development of children, they have the memories of vicious men and women. In the school for the real babes, women almost always teach and tend them, and we make practically no distinction between the two sexes. Just then three fresh teachers came in and took the place of those who were in the room when we entered. We waited for the new lesson to begin. At once a perfect pandemonium broke out, due to the withdrawal of one group of mental influences, but almost at once the newcomers by the simple power of their will had reduced the rebels to submission. There is no room for weak disciplinarians here, I remarked. You mean for men of weak will? No, and there is very little room for them anywhere over here. If a soul is weak-willed when it comes, it has to develop its will power at once. It will make no real progress till it does. That is one of our most difficult problems in these schools. Most of these fallen ones are pitiably weak-willed, though passionate enough. Then the lesson began. It was similar in its methods to that under which I learnt at my school, but what a difference in the subject matter. The truths their instructor tried to teach them were the simple, elementary, and obvious truths which we learn when we are children on earth. To these unfortunate creatures, however, they seemed terribly hard. Patiently he went over the same things again and again, but many seemed quite unable to grasp any ideas at all. It must take an endless age to teach some of these, I said to my guide. Almost endless, he replied. There are some who have been here for thousands of years as you reckon time. They have even lost their memories, but what good does it do if they are so hopeless as that? All the time, he replied, they are learning discipline, and that is much. Sooner or later they will learn other things. There is always hope, and time. What is it? It is an invention of men on Earth which, fortunately, has never reached here. This is some of the finest work done in this land of the undying, but it is very exacting work. We will now visit the girls' class. Really, of course, they are degraded women who are striving to make progress, but they are harder to control than the boys. As he spoke, we left the room, and, passing along several long passages, came to another classroom. On entering this, I found it was a class of girls, with three women teachers, but I had hardly time to take it all in before a tremendous uproar broke out, and several little girls rushed up to me. Now, although I usually like children, I felt an instinctive shrinking from these vicious women in their immature bodies. I felt there was nothing really childlike in them. I tried to shake them off, but they clung so close that I thought I should never be able to get away from them. But the schoolmistresses, having by now reduced the others to order, at length fetched away those who were clinging to me. You see how strong still their old vicious habits are, and how weak their wills. Your entrance has completely upset them merely because you are a man. It is terrible, I replied. But how do you manage to keep them here at all? Do you do it by force? For their wills are so weak that they cannot possibly keep even to the idea of progressing for long. He replied, no force, as you understand the word, is employed, but, at the same time, we exert all our influence to keep them on the right path. Their very weakness helps us once we have got them here. They find it very difficult to make up their minds to go away, and so remain and learn. Still, of course, some do go back to wallow in the mire. I noticed that the mistress was unable to make much progress owing to our presence, which distracted the little girl's attention. I was therefore not surprised when my guide said, "We will be going. You have seen enough now." After leaving this classroom, we went up many flights of stairs till we at length reached the top story. Here we entered the chapel, and the light of faith was so intense that I could only bear it for a very short time. As I have already described to you what happens there, I shall not do so again. Soon after we left the house of rest and toiled, slowly up the road by which we had entered hell. Once back on the ground above and out of that horrible darkness, we rested for but a short time, and then seemed to be wafted through the air in an instant back to this part of our realm. Now, said H.J.L., I must be leaving you. He rose and floated away, and gradually the landscape became dark and indistinct. Then I sank into oblivion. Chapter 20, He Visits the School for the Babes Who Knew Not Faith. Letter from H.J.L. March 21, 1914. A short time after the visit to the School of Those Who Are Progressing, I was taken to the School of the Babes. Again I went down a kind of road with my guide into the darkness, and as before found a building right across it. On entering this I found a courtyard, not so high as the other one, but much larger. In it were all manner of trees and flowers, and a pretty sparkling fountain. Here numbers of children were playing about. These were far different from those I had seen before. Their young baby faces corresponded to their immature bodies. They were like earth children for the most part, and, not like those men in the form of children whom I had seen on my last visit to hell. These were they who had never sinned, but not having any knowledge of God or faith, have to learn of these, and as they learn their little spiritual bodies develop until it is time for them to pass on to the realm of half-belief, when they go to the secondary schools. Rosy Dawn is an example, and well known to you. Now this school was under the control of Sister Maria, who has often spoken through you, and as she has given you many details, I shall not repeat them, only adding what I consider necessary to complete the picture. I should add that I had particularly asked to be taken to this school rather than any other, as Rosy Dawn had come from it, and also Sister Maria. On entering one of several doors which opened into the quad, I found we were in a kind of creche, where all the immature and premature children went. How soon may it be said that a soul comes into existence when a child is conceived? I inquired. It is evidently not at birth. My guide replied, even I cannot tell you the precise moment when the soul enters the fleshy home which clothes it. but it is extraordinarily early. As soon as the germ has definitely ceased to be a germ and has begun to grow into a human body, a soul enters it. But we do not know how God performs this wonder. That is hid, even from us to whom much is plain. Of this at least you can be sure, that long before the child quickens, a soul has become enshrined in it. I now directed my attention to the scene around me, and saw that the creche was full of gentle, sweet-faced women who watched over the little immature atoms. We passed to other rooms, and found that in each new one the babes were more advanced than in the last. At length we reached a long room with a table down the middle. This was the one you saw in the mirror, and I gathered it was the top form of the school. Here I met Sister Maria, whom I greatly liked, but found she was so much more spiritual than I that it was difficult to keep in touch with her. "Do you have a chapel with continuous service?" I asked. "Oh yes," she replied. "Work and pray. You know the old monastic proverb." My guide spoke, "There is no arrangement here for the light from the chapel being sent out like a beacon, as in the other house. This is not a house of refuge, and no lost souls from hell come here to pollute this happy spot. The children are born here by their guides or guardian angels, who, though they have no work to do on earth, yet have the same sort of work as any of us here. Generally, if possible, a relative of the dead child is brought, if suitable, to mother it, but, alas, many have no such relatives here. They, the relatives, are often too evil to be permitted to help. No evil thing is admitted within these walls, although it stands in hell. Here, you see, there is no need to have separate religious houses. These children carry no preconceived ideas of religion with them, and have nothing to unlearn. This is but one of the many points in which they differ from the others. Hence here we find Roman Catholics, churchmen, and nonconformists all joining in the good work. I. And who are the women who do this work? He. Except those who are related to the children, they are those who, loving children much, yet for some reason had none, or lost them in early childhood. I perceived that even these children had their little naughty ways as on earth, though to a less degree. My guide said, "This must be so. If they were incapable of evil, where would free will be? But it will never develop to any considerable extent here, and soon will vanish as they progress. You, too, can sin after death, but whereas theirs is the seed of evil, yours is the fruit, and now difficult to destroy. Now let us away." So again I scaled the path which leads out of hell. Goodbye, H. J. L. Chapter 21, He Visits the Great House of Refuge in Hell. Transvision and conversation during night of 23rd of March 1914, I found myself standing beside H. J. L. on an expanse of open down. He said, _, "I have recently been to see the House of Refuge. You will remember that I was not allowed to see over that at first." J. W. "Yes, I remember perfectly." H. J. L. "Well, having come down through the darkness by a road such as those I have previously described, but not the same as either, I entered the roofed, in courtyard as before. There was a school here also, but this time I crossed the quad at an angle, and passing under a classical or Renaissance doorway, entered a passage. I should say that this building was in the Renaissance, not the perpendicular, style. From the passage we passed through a door into a large room which was empty save for a few couches and a table in the center. My guide spoke, "This room forms the anteroom for the school. Those spirits who are ready to be taken in are admitted here. They are often very weak, and at first are placed under the guidance and control of a special teacher. He or she watches over them for the whole time, and only after a while are they deemed sufficiently strong to attend the proper classes. They need individual attention at first." "Are they kept here for the whole time?" "No. This is the room which connects up school and refuge home. It's a sort of isolation ward. After a time, as soon as they are strong enough to get about properly, they are taken to a sort of study, one for each pupil and his teacher. See." He led me out of the room into the corridor and through a doorway opposite. Here I found a much smaller room, and in it was a bright male spirit and on a couch a small misshapen child. The bright spirit was playing on a harp a beautiful soothing hymn. Music soothes pain, and that unfortunate one is suffering terrible mental pain, said my guide. We entered another study, and here another exhausted spirit was being treated. What is he doing? I asked, indicating the bright spirit who was making signs over the body of the patient. My guide replied, he is lending him some of his magnetic fluid. The patient is weak in willpower, and this spirit is treating him. The method is analogous to that of the magnetic healer on Earth. We then returned to the anteroom and passed through a door at the opposite end. This led into the house of refuge proper. We found ourselves in a kind of hospital ward. There were no bedclothes on the beds, if so I can call them, and on these lay tiny children. Now the most extraordinary thing about it was that the children who were nearest the door through which we had entered were by far the most active and strong, yet they were the smallest. As we moved towards the opposite end of the dormitory, where there was another door, I noticed that the children grew larger and larger, but at the same time they seemed more flabby, dark, and indistinct. My guide said, I will explain this difficulty to you. These spirits when in hell appear tall, fixed and strong. The more evil they were, the stronger they were. Their spiritual bodies were made of evil and darkness, just as ours are of goodness and light. When, however, they begin to repent and come here, the evil principle within them grows weaker and weaker, and as it does so the real spiritual body develops slowly. Thus at first these rescued spirits grow weaker and weaker, and then they become as little children in very truth. Once this has happened, they are able to go on to the school where they begin to grow again, though often very slowly. I asked, but where do they get this element of light from which the spiritual body develops? He replied, even in hell men retain some little spark of spiritual truth. They cannot help it, for it is implanted by God. It is the divine element in all, which, however much it may be submerged, can never be quite extinguished. Even in hell men learn in spite of their evil will. Thus they learn that death does not end life, often they wish it did. Once they begin to grow better, they grow weaker, and so hell becomes more and more hateful to them, for in hell the strongest is he who is most wicked and the strongest oppresses and cruelly ill-treats those who are weaker than he, and there is no death to intervene. Is the pain, then, in hell? I inquired. Yes, only it is mental and spiritual suffering. But to the souls there it is as real as physical suffering is on earth, just as here the earth on which we stand, though immaterial to the physical world, seems real and material to us. Yes, they suffer, but no friendly death comes to end the anguish of the wretched victims. The old descriptions of hell, though to the modern world they seem gross and materialistic, in reality were not so very inaccurate. They were rough-hewn and couched in materialistic language. But much of the apparent materialistic detail is due to two facts. Firstly, that to the spirit these experiences seem as materialistic as men's do to them. Secondly, many of the finer distinctions made by the spirits have failed to penetrate the medium's brain, whereas the more materialistic obtained a ready reception. Then there were mediums long ago through whom spirits in hell could send messages, certainly. And, further, at times men who were still alive have been able to visit these realms when their bodies were in a trance and carry back some recollection of what goes on here. Dante is perhaps the finest exponent of this kind of revelation. Then Dante's great work is not the mere figment of his poetic brain based on his own religious views. No, it is a real revelation seen in the trance state, but molded into its present shape by the poetic imagination and slightly colored by the preconceived religious views of the medium. These changes took place when he set to work to put it into literary form. He had no misunderstanding of the facts immediately after he returned to the normal state. He ceased, and we passed out of the room into another. Here we found the spirits just as they came in from hell. Rescuers were constantly arriving, bringing some poor unfortunate being with them. These they handed over to others, who received them kindly, reasoned with them, and urged them to undergo medical treatment. It was not always easy to persuade them to do this, and even while I was there, several went out of the house of refuge back to hell. Perfect freedom is the law here, and if a man wishes to be foul, foul he will be. I noticed that the magnetic healing seemed to be very largely employed in this stage, and the whole air seemed filled with particles of darkness given off by the lost spirits undergoing treatment. We passed through another door into a comparatively small anteroom in which various newcomers were waiting, attended by their rescuers, and at the further end was a great door. As I approached it, I was aware of a living terror, awful, intangible, but real, and knew that it lay beyond the door. As we drew nearer and nearer to it, the nameless terror seemed to grip my soul and numb it. I would have turned and fled, but my guide urged me to go forward. Now we stood in front of it, and suddenly it was flung open and a rescuer and his charge sprang in. The terror seemed to flow in with the darkness, and I cowered back against my guide. Quickly the door closed too, yet in that brief instant I saw quite plainly that the fugitives had been pursued up to the very door itself, and I heard the wild yell of baffled fury and hate as the pursuers found themselves kept back by the wall of good thoughts, which they could not penetrate. How was it, I asked my guide, that the pursuers were not able to prevent this man reaching safety? Each rescuer carries around him a wall of faith and good thoughts, which these evil spirits cannot penetrate unless he himself makes a breach in it by giving way to any of the temptations with which they will attempt to lure him back. The poor lost soul, if he really desires to progress, can, with the permission of the rescuer, pass within this wall and so be safe. But if the rescuer refuses, he cannot, and if while protected with it he ceases to desire to progress, he will be at once driven out and so fall a victim to his pursuers. Often and often this does happen, and that is why those who take up this work must be gifted with the greatest patience. After one has striven so hard and risked so much, it is indeed hard to see the fruits of victory torn from our very grasp. We turned, and very thankful was I to escape from the proximity of that nameless terror. Are there any hospitals similar to this in the realm of half-belief? I inquired. Yes, my guide answered, but for a different kind of case. Many people who suffered from mind troubles on earth come to that realm. They fall into two divisions, those whose minds were unable to work, owing to some physical defect, and those whose minds themselves were affected. The first group also may be subdivided into those whose physical defects, being present from birth, prevented all development, and those whose minds, having developed, were suddenly unhinged by some physical accident. These latter need but little treatment, but the other groups need treatment which, in some cases, measured by earth time, seems very long. You shall see these hospitals at another time. We then quickly passed out of the house of refuge into the school and on into the courtyard, thence out of the gateway, and through the darkness out of hell. Thus ended this strange lesson, A.W. It was a very extraordinary experience. Do you think that the smaller houses of refuge scattered through hell have such elaborate arrangements? H.J.L. No. They are just temporary receiving rooms where the rescued are patched up till they can get to one of these great institutions. Now we must part. He rose and the maid a sign over me, and I seemed to fall asleep. J. W. Chapter 22, The Author Visits H. J. L. At College. Trance Conversation, etc. March 30, 1914. I found myself standing on an eminence, and beneath me I could see the towers and roofs of the college where I knew H. J. L. dwelt. H. J. L. was standing beside me, and began, "Well, Jack, would you like to see over that college?" "Yes," I replied. He began to descend the slope, and as we went I said, "Carrie asked me to ask you whether you could not give her any information concerning the lighter side of life on this plane, your recreations and so forth, for I presume you are not always learning lessons." H.J.L. "Well, this meeting shall be devoted to that subject. I will show you something, though, of course, only a glimpse of that side of life here." We had now reached the college, and paused in front of the gate. This gate was not in the center, as I expected, but towards the southeast corner. I call it by this name, for I saw the east window of the chapel in the decorated style over the great gateway and behind the roof of the first line of buildings. This great gate, instead of a tower, had a gable roof with the end of the gable towards the quad and the side where we entered. The roof of the chapel was similarly high-pitched. The east window of the chapel was apparently in the decorated style, and over the great gateway were three long windows, the center one having a little tracery and one mullion. The entrance to the hall, instead of being high the middle of the line of buildings, was at the northwest corner. For the rest, I need not go into much detail, as in the main it followed the lines of the usual college building. Having passed through the gate, we crossed the quad at an angle and entered the hall. Chapter 23, of their amusements and how the spirits inspire men on earth. This is a sort of club to which I belong, H. J. L. explained. Here I found a large number of men congregated, some were playing chess, and I sat and watched several most brilliant games played by a man whom H. J. L. stated was Lasker. I doubt if I shall remember these games, I said. They are extraordinarily brilliant, but almost beyond me, even here, and I am sure they would be quite beyond my comprehension on earth. Don't worry about that, he replied. You are not intended to remember the actual games, but only the fact that we do play. After a time we went out and passed through the great gate. I am going to show you another amusement I enjoy, H. J. L. said. He took me along a regular street into a square which was built in the style of the early Renaissance. Passing through a door, I found we were in, what I can only designate by the name of, an architect's office. It, however, lacked the general air of untidiness usually prevalent in such places, and I noticed that models seemed to play a more important part in the production of designs here than they do on Earth. There were, however, a certain number of drawings to be seen. My partner is away learning a new spiritual truth, so I can't introduce him to you, but he was a Frenchman who lived during the end of the 16th and the beginning of the 17th centuries. He studied, too, in Italy, so you see he knows a fair amount about Renaissance architecture. Still, he's not quite up to date as to modern requirements, such as drainage arrangements, and that is where I come in. Of course he knows all about design and ornament, but I help with the more practical work. Here all the arts have reached a far higher stage of excellence than anything of which you are aware on earth. J. W. But what good are these designs? Do you build houses here? L. We can and sometimes do, but most often we endeavor to impress our ideas upon living men and get them to build them on the material plane. Let me tell you that all inspiration comes from this side. The works of genius are really the inspirations of the spirits acting through that man who is really mediumistic. This partly explains why so many men of genius are of an erratic temperament, and often of an unsatisfactory moral attitude. Being mediumistic, they are liable to fall victim to undesirable influences, evil spirits, in fact. W. Do you mean, then, that no great inventions originate on the earth, or does this statement refer only to artistic inspiration? L. Art, literature, music, even mechanical inventions, are almost always inspired from this side. Slight improvements and adjustment to enable the great idea to fit the conditions of earth life are the kind of advances which men make on earth. I hesitate to say that no great idea was ever invented on the earth, but I know of none, and am sure that they are very few and far between. This explains in part why it is that progress is so slow in the early centuries of life on this planet and of late has proceeded at such a rate. Men come over to us with some knowledge and a keen interest in various subjects, and in these more advanced surroundings they discover new laws, and in the light of this new knowledge inspire those who are following in their footsteps. All the same, men are often very stupid. We send out a brilliant idea, and the best parts are often misunderstood by, or fail to penetrate, the denser minds of those still on earth. Again and again we see our finest ideas reduced to a miserable travesty of their real selves. As a man gets older, too, he often seems to grow more material, especially if he has become prosperous. This leads to poorer, or, at any rate, more commonplace work, for the finer ideas are no longer able to penetrate. Look at this idea for a church. Splendid, isn't it? Renaissance style, but far finer than anything they've got on earth. But my partner had not realized how important heating and lighting are. I'm correcting that.